Dude, have you seen that flask that was in the fridge?
I think I drank that. Should I not have?
Oh, why?
Mm-hmm.
It was my homunculus semen that I was preparing that.
Why are you keeping that in the fridge, first of all? You're like,
Why would I keep it in the fridge? If I keep it out, it'll get bad, surely.
well,
I
no, you're
assumed.
supposed to jerk off into. Oh, girl. Oh, all right.
I thought you'd get to jerk off for 40 days and 49s, and into the. That's what I thought. Have I got the different ritual
Well,
to do
yeah,
there?
but like, my understanding is you're supposed to like do it into the horse dung. No. You're supposed to put it into the glass receptacle, then put that in the horse dung. Why were you cooling it first? What purpose does that serve?
Look, because okay, my theory is the homunculus ritual. So you just do it once. You just do it once, and that's like what? It's like a tablespoon. For me, it's like a teaspoon. That's not enough, I think. Well, maybe it's a matter of I have a theory, right? And I'm getting a really big horse. So you mean I didn't have to bleed out of my femoral artery for 40 days and 40 nights?
Oh no, you're only supposed to do that one night, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Shit. All right. Oh.
I've been feeling so weak.
Yeah, you botched this, bro. I mean, like, to be fair, I'm not
It's
sure that's
experiment.
not gonna work.
Experimentation.
I'm not sure that's not gonna work. It might just be like a really fat homunculus because you're giving it so much blood.
Yep. I feel that like sometimes the process of finding new rituals is just to do a bunch of fucked up, like ritual adjacent stuff until something works.
Listen, you mix enough bodily fluids and other bodily fluids, eventually you're gonna get something.
It's like how ancient Chinese alchemists discovered anything. They'll just be like, let's see what happens if we add a bit of arsenic and cinnabar to this. Oh, I'm dead. But next time it'll
I mean, that's
work.
not just a Chinese alchemist thing.
That's
My
true.
understanding is, I believe it's like sulfur was discovered through the distillation of urine.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. And they probably had some terrible reason to want to distill
You
urine.
know what? Just like, hey, what if I distilled my own piss? What would happen? Oh,
We're
no,
a curious species.
excuse me. It wasn't sulfur, it was phosphorus that was discovered that way.
Oh, okay. That makes sense as well.
So just like, yeah, what if I distilled my own piss? Oh, this might be useful actually. I should probably justify this somehow. But yeah, Torms and I have been with some dubious results. I'm gonna need to brush my teeth after this.
And I do apologize, Frank, because I've been spending the last like 40 days and 40 nights eating the opposite of pineapples.
Just the philosophical inverse of pineapples.
That's right, exactly. The platonic unideal of
It's just a
pineapple.
pineapple-shaped hole in the universe.
That's right.
Right. Anyway, so Tormson and I have been experimenting a bit recently with the creation of life. Neither of us are capable of doing such, biologically speaking. I haven't had a womb in, about 6 years or so.
I got a horse's womb if you want.
Well,
Just hanging
yeah,
out.
that's a good thing to have around considering where we've been making homunculi, and the original Paracelsus is sort of ambiguous on that. We'll get into that later. But yeah, we've been looking into sort of various created unnatural entities. It's the science fair at the 33.3 FM studio. We're like, hey, let's. What are the pros and cons of all these various kinds of constructed life that you can use magic to make? And we've been doing our reading on the topic, and it turns out there's a fuck ton of them. We knew there was at least a few, but
One
wow, there's a lot.
second. One second. As soon as you said science fair, my mind just like it just immediately expanded into some alternate Hogwarts, which is really fucked up. but and more real world alchemical, and they have like a science fair, and every year the students get together and like, okay, we need to win the, but it's like that's a game.
I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of occult underground trailer park Hogwarts out there.
Yeah,
I assume it's a Montessori school.
Oh yeah, of course, it has to be a Montessori school in the trailer park. Actually, no, that actually works. I like it. It's a good. And alchemy is involved.
Yep. Sure, of course. And you know, you give kids an excuse to like mix around a bunch of chemicals, and they go fucking nuts.
Oh yeah, sure.
So yeah, it turns out there's a fuck ton of these. You have these sort of iconic mythological ones, the golem being the primary example. But I've been doing some reading on the topic, and it turns out basically every fucking human culture has some sort of guy that is made by humans for some purpose, usually protection, labor, or the accruing of knowledge.
The man-made man. Is that the archetype for this?
Man-made mans.
There's definitely an element of, what is it? I guess this would be a reversal of the Freudian sort of penis envy. Womb envy.
Sure, sure.
Towards women. Like the
I mean, as we've discovered here, other than, you know, the accidents that have been made along the way, making love's pretty sweet. Especially when, you know, you don't need to go through the whole giving birth process. That really takes the edge off it.
That's true. But then again, there's other things that balance it out. There's a reason the normal process takes a while. It doesn't end up with a vicious little monster out to get you, or a monstrosity. Well, then again, it kind of describe children.
If talking about homunculi, that's very much the case. Often, these kinds of creatures are some sort of fucked up gremlin that, if not out to get their creator, is out to get someone. But that's not necessarily the case. It seems the sort of pattern I saw is for like older stuff. You'll see that, right? As magic has developed over the years, and more knowledge has been accrued, these forms of artificial life have become less limited and less violent. Like, you know, you're talking stuff like golems and homunculi. Those are pretty old.
Old school, yeah.
But more recent stuff like clockworks are... A clockwork isn't... Generally, like... I mean, internally not indistinguishable from a human. But, like... They do pretty... You know, they aren't dickheads. They aren't super limited.
They can be.
Sure, you can make them that way if you want. But, like, they're just as obedient or... just as mean on average as like a fucking person is.
Sure.
Or unspeakable servants.
They're not like clockworks are built from something more of humanity, I think. Maybe. Because they're not just built from like the simple sort of base material matter like your semen, your bloods, and that sort of thing. They're memories. Which makes a difference because there's that element of the human consciousness present in clockworks that I think makes them distinct from other created entities.
Kind of what you see is like the sort of the closer you get to the head when you're making a constructed entity, the more intelligent it tends to be. Another good example being unspeakable servants. You know, you pluck out your eyeball. It's still pretty close to the head. The optic nerve and all that's going to have some bits of brain matter hanging onto it. And especially if you're making the abominable kind, which we can get into the various classifications of natural entities later on, they're pretty fucking clever. They're still obedient. They are clever in a way that a golem isn't necessarily.
But it's sort of like when you got your clockworks versus your unspeakable servants in terms of how they are soulless. Like, Glockworks are soulless in the way Data is, while an unspeakable service is soulless in the way a Shoggoth is, a well-trained Shoggoth is. And that's a very different experience. In fact, I would disagree that the first one is actually soulless. I think that often they're just told
I disagree that the second is soulless, right? I mean, like, think about the Shoggoth and in the Mounds of Madness. We don't know that they're not intelligent. That guy's been fucking isolated for, like, hundreds of thousands of years middle of the fucking ice. Like,
yep. Sure.
We don't know that's a soul. He's probably... It's very... There's nothing to say that a Shoggoth can not go mad like any other character in a Lovecraft story.
Okay, now we're going to start getting into, like, the anthro-chauvinistic humanocentrism of the Call of Cthulhu concept of sanity, or something that only applies to human beings. And I've long disagreed with this. I'm like...
Yeah, and then you also get into the whole discussion of, like, a lot of revisionist Lovecraft fiction from the past, like, 20-odd years that generally likes to deconstruct a lot of his more, more racist elements of his work. Tends to be like, oh, but can we not sympathize with the Shoggoths as they were slaves? Which is pretty fucked up. Pretty fucked up theory reason create life. The whole Elizabeth Bear, Shoggoths and Bloom sort of shit.
Absolutely. And it's like very much, you can apply it, you can make parallels with human history, but you can also make parallels with human futures in terms of our like development of AI. And at least in one of Kenneth Scroggins' Delta Green documents, there was one bit about Majestic 12 plans to build various slave races, because everyone's got slave races. All the big boys out there have slave races, so we need to uplift the dolphins so they can do shit for us, which I thought was an interesting way of doing it, like having humanity becoming like this. Often people go about like, oh, humanity becoming more like the great old ones, but humanity becoming more like the elder things is also a very real possibility.
Yeah, and you know, there's tons of stories involving constructed entities from folklore mythology that have a lot of parallels with like paperclip maximizing AI runoff stories.
Okay, fair enough. I can see that. So there's some similarities between the sort of paperclip multiplying stories and like weird stories from folklore where we're like, oh, we've got something which makes like the water is running now. The water will always take. It's like a flood myth almost, in a way.
Yeah.
And there's other parallels. Like I know there's a few like myths about like. When death goes away from the world and it just becomes overpopulated, so death has to come back and save it by like, because otherwise it's just paperclips everywhere, but it's in the form of like people.
The sort of thing that comes to mind there is the Krat, which is this like magical creature from Estonian mythology and folklore. That's like, it's made of like brooms and pots and, you know, other like household items together and then giving the devil 3 drops of your blood.
Yeah, that's you do.
And as is often the case, its primary purpose in life is following the instructions of its creator.
Sure.
Well, an interesting aspect of it is that for the Krat, it was necessary for it to constantly keep working. Otherwise, it would, like, turn on its owner. And when the owner had nothing for the Krat to do, it would tell it to do something that was impossible.
Oh.
Another example is like there's certain versions of the Golem story where it keeps growing, and Rabbi Lowe specifically realizes like, okay, I need to destroy this thing and, you know, get rid of the word of God on its forehead, otherwise eventually this thing is gonna get so large it expands to fill the entire universe.
Now that's one way to like have the universe return to the infinite source. It's just build something that absorbs it all under God's
name.
Yeah,
it's all clay now. It's just
all
every
clay.
Bit of the universe
back,
is clay.
Back to clay.
Yep.
We were made from clay. It's now time to go back. That's pretty good, actually. When you think about it, actually, because we weren't we like wasn't the human in like Genesis wasn't when human beings like fashioned from clay?
Oh, like yes, but also like there's so many fucking mythological traditions that have humans made from clay.
There you go. There you go. So that's an aspect of the golem I didn't think of. It's
like,
kind of
that goes back to fucking like Sumerian, Babylonian, Egyptian Fertile Crescent shit.
I mean, it kind of makes sense out of like all the things. Like, what could we have been made of? It's like, well, is this stuff that sticks together and we can shape like a human? But maybe it's that.
And the big thing is, it's, you know, stuff that's going to be near a source of water.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course, the first civilizations that are writing down their creation stories are going to be like, oh yeah, this stuff that we have to deal with all the time because it's near the stuff that we built our culture around.
Makes sense.
You can go like way, way back to like ancient Egypt. I'm talking like old dynasty shit.
Old dynasty shit. The best dynasties. Anything post Sea People's invasion is just what's they sold out.
But like there's there's the Ushabti, right? Are you familiar with those things? So the Ushabti, for any listeners that don't know, they're like the little funerary figurines that are often buried with pharaohs. And this like goes back to apparently it's not old period, it's intermediate period. First intermediate period, but that's still like, you know,
still pretty,
2000
pretty
BC.
Good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The interesting thing is, as time went on, they started being depicted more and more with, like, vases and farming implements and shit. And basically the idea of the Ushabti, that they would be servants for the pharaoh in the afterlife.
Sure, okay, and this is...
Servants, their job is to do manual labor for the pharaoh in the next world.
It's a similar concept. It's not quite the same. But it's like fashioning things for use in the afterlife. So it's not creating life here, but it's kind of creating dead life, which is also an interesting...
Well, like that. Sure, and I agree there. But I think it is very interesting that like the first time we're really kind of... basically, the first case we have of like making a human-like entity with their own hands...
Sure.
Is specifically for the purpose of labor.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Fuck, our cosmology means that all the fucking labors that we got in this life aren't going to exist in the next one necessarily. All right, we need to find some sort of way around this.
I do know that in China, they banned certain offerings to the deceased because there was a tradition of offering the hell money. To spend in the afterlife, but also people were making paper like villas and sedans and mistresses for the afterlife, and it has raised so many implications.
I mean, when you go through like mythology and see what constructed entities are made for, it's generally one of three things: labor, protection, or fucking.
I mean, it's the same as how, like, what's happening with AI at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. What are AI made for now?
I mean, pretty much, what are these chatbots for? They'd replace certain industries and for cyber sex, and that's it.
But moving a bit forward to, like, Greek mythology, that's when you start seeing, like, constructed beings that are, I'd say, much more recognizable to the current conception of them. Those are the automatons which show up all over the fucking place in
so many places.
Greek mythology. A lot of European mythology in general.
Anywhere that they had automatons or puppets or anything, the obvious thing was, well, what if this came to life, this human-looking thing we made? Wouldn't that be fucking weird?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's like the smith deity of that culture specifically made this artifact. I mean, if you look at a lot of the brass and bronze creatures in Greek mythology, they're usually made by Hephaestus.
Yeah, but if something's made by a god, then I don't think it counts as something man, like man-made man. Then because like usually with the homunculus, also with the golem to an extent, It was about stealing the power of creation from God slash the gods.
I would say it depends on how anthropomorphic the god is.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's not like you in Greek mythology. It's not like people. I don't know, but the gods were gods. They weren't humans that became gods.
No, so. No, I agree. Usually that's the case, at least. Though there yeah. is some sort of there is something of a gray area there.
Sure.
When especially with dealing like demigods and whatnot.
Yeah, that's true.
And even then, like interesting thing you'll see here is that a lot of these artifacts will have like human like elements of their structure, like Talos. The bronze colossus is depicted as having like a single vein.
Oh.
He was made by Hephaestus to protect Crete from like pirates and invaders.
Yep.
Sometimes he's depicted as like a brass bowl. Sometimes he's man-shaped. I like the man-shaped one more because a lot of times the defense was just hucking boulders out into the ocean. But he has a single vein that goes from its head to the ball of his foot, to his ankle, and it's shut right. only by a bronze nail. And generally, when Talos is slain by Medea in various stories, she yep. does that by plucking out the nail and letting all the ichor. Not being used generically there, like the original True. Use of that term, which was basically the blood of the gods.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Greek mythology. So, I find that super interesting because it's like, alright, you have Hephaestus making, maybe not like a copy of a man, but it's a god-made god.
Mm. Yeah, like a god-made. He's
constructing a god and using part of his life force to animate it.
Mm. This is giving me all sorts of ideas involving the early Soviet god building movement, and I'm like, what if they went out in search of a god? Yeah, definitely. Also thinking about like a sort of fantasy society or world where they have where like automatons that are powered by god Ica are common, but also you'd have the common problem of people just siphoning off them for their own purposes.
Sure.
Find this like this husk of an automaton that's been set upon by bandits that just like put the hose in and sucked out all the Ica.
Fitting it into like a fucking empty vodka bottle.
And this thing's like, no, stop. I have to protect the city. What are you doing?
Don't stop sucking. He's almost dead.
Oh my god.
But there's similar kinds of figures throughout, like, I'd say, European mythology, especially. The automaton is the big thing. And that's like particularly European in that case, because like a lot of times these are creatures and figures made out of brass or bronze. Outside of Greek, you have like Gulenbursti, which was this like giant brass boar that was made by two of the dwarves as gifts to Freyr. I know that Ilmarinen, the smith god of the Finns, at one point made a bride out of gold.
Interesting.
He makes this bride out of gold after his first wife dies. He's like, oh wait, no, she's hard and cold. So he tries to pawn it off to his brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what? No, just put her back in the fire and use all those resources to make like trinkets and shit, dude.
Mm.
And then give them out to people. So, again, we're seeing the pattern of, like, all right, defense, labor, or something you can have sex with. Arguably, yeah. Pygmalion and Galatea is a story that could be...
Oh, yeah, the classic.
That could fall into the latter category. Because in most of the stories, Pygmalion's motivation is he, like, just is like, women suck. I'm going to make a woman that fits my standards. And it gets very sad that she's not alive, despite the fact that, you know, he's kissing her. And in some of these stories, he is described as fondling her.
Mm.
Until he prays to Aphrodite during her festival, like, hey, could you bring my marble body pillow to life, please?
It's so funny how far back the incel mentality goes. What is it? Attraction to women, but resentment towards them, like just turning into this weird like desire for I don't know.
And for a weird desire to like have a version of a woman, you know, like it's the it's like it's a desire for the purely like the signifier of a woman without any of the interiority.
Like I can see the difference between like when you see like sort of the consumers of sex dolls, and if it's someone who just wants this like I want a sex doll to have sex with, and that's it pretty much. You're like, well, okay, fair enough. But then you have people like, well, I've given her a name, and we spend time together, and all this sort of thing. It's just like, oh, you wanted a girlfriend, but you didn't want like to actually have a girlfriend that had their own interiority. You wanted a complete projection. Okay. Fair, and that's less fair enough.
I mean, in the original Ovid, like the Metamorphosis, what motivates Pygmalion to go full incel, also whatever, is that he sees the proprietaries of Cyprus, who were like sacred prostitutes, practicing prostitution, and he began, in a quote, "detesting the faults beyond measure with which nature has given to women."
Oh, God, none of these.
Well, and this like this sort of like a long-running motif in Greek mythology. Fucking the story of Pandora has undergone a lot of changes to like the sort of parable about the dangers of curiosity that you see nowadays. That's actually like my understanding is a pretty recent development, like the
Sure, that's a
past few hundred
bulbarization.
years. Yeah, like the original story was just like Zeus created woman to punish man after Prometheus gave them fire, is basically what it was.
That's hilarious and fucked up.
Which
Man,
is
the
its
ancient
implications to
Greeks were
me
just.
in terms of like, oh wait, so what, before Prometheus came around, like it was just nothing but dudes? Just a
That's
bunch of dudes
interesting.
doing dude shit?
Yeah, dudes doing dude shit. What a there's so many things you could do with that in terms of like modern little cults.
Yeah, Zeus sends Pandora down there in the original Theogony. And Hephaestus make woman. Which is interesting because it implies like goddesses predate human woman.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense in a way. I don't know.
And she comes down with these jars, these urns, not boxes, as is sort of the current version of the story, but these urns just full of all the evil shit. And depending on the story in the original Greek, it's like she tricks men into opening the urns, letting loose all the terrible things into the world, or the curiosity of man gets the better of them. And
All these stories, if there's gonna be like a male protagonist who like is the one behind it, is the one I'm just seeing like all these sort of Greek stories, especially that one with like the woman like the bringing all the jars down. I'm just imagining like a resigned looking like ancient Greek guy who's just Ed O'Neill, like Al Bundy.
reclining on a rock somewhere,
Yeah.
legs spread so that his toga only barely conceals his dick.
Oh yeah, man, spreading in a toga. Oh no. Oh fuck. And definitely like 80s, 90s era Ed O'Neill. That would be the one.
As opposed to like, well, Modern Family, I don't know.
Yeah. But it's not quite as bad. Less of the archetype that I'm going for, or more of a deconstruction of the archetype.
Far as I could tell, a lot of these stories of like, especially if you're talking like automatons, that goes back to like Homer and Hesiod, so you know, around
Yeah.
7th, 8th century BCE.
And again, like I wanna keep some of this stuff for a future Clockworks episode. Because they are distinct, I feel, in many ways, in like, the
I would agree.
concept. Because they are sort of artificial life. And, you know, well, then again, there's different ways to make artificial life, isn't there?
Well, like it generally is sort of the motif that you see in mythology a lot. over time, and especially in Anunnaris, is that to create artificial life, it requires some sort of sacrifice.
Yeah.
And sort of the more potent that sacrifice is, the more lifelike the construct is, right? Going from a bit of your blood and cum for a homunculus to a whole eyeball for an natural entity, all the way up to like one of your most treasured memories for a clockwork.
I would say that with the clockwork, the fact that it is a bit, we're going into mind body problem areas, but there is a distinction there, I think, because when you give away a bit of your, I don't know, when you give away a bit of your mind, you're giving away a bit of yourself. And so that the creation is coming from your self, your more spiritual self, as opposed to this is like a glob of my precious bodily fluids that I'm using. I think the results are different, generally speaking.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. Brings up a lot of interesting questions to me, like, all right, what happens when you make something with even less than that? You get something probably a lot like a crot, which is like, okay, you got 3 drops of blood. It's just like this little...
That's fun.
Sorcerer's Apprentice-esque juried golem, basically. And interesting thing about golems is that they are kind of the exception to this. There isn't really a human component to a golem.
Mm. Well, I think with the golem, because they're made from clay, they're made from the same stuff that humans were made from, animated with one of the names of God. I think it's a different sort of process involved there. Like, it's a different way... It's a different tricksy way of... making life. I know in Islamic alchemy, the quest for creating synthetic life was about the emulation of divine creation and the life-giving powers of the like creation story and tapping into it. While I don't know, the golem seems different. I don't know. We need to do like the golem, because the golem has a lot of, there's a lot there. And it ties into a lot of stuff that we don't have time to talk about today in terms of Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah. But that's another episode. That's another topic which I think could be its own episode. But it is undeniably very much linked to what we are talking about.
But like going outside of Europe even, you see a lot of these same motifs of like blood, animal parts, and semen being the basis for the creation of these sorts of entities. The Tupolak, which... and the Greenland Inuit tradition is like this human made, it's like this puppet like thing that is made from the mixed parts of dead animals and dead children.
Oh, Jesus.
And generally, the creation of these sorts of entities, and they what actually Tupolak is varies a lot from, you know, region to region, to the point where it's like, I am somewhat skeptical that these are all called Tupolak, even. That strikes me as more of like some anthropologist fucking up somewhere. One tradition of Tupolak creation is described is that a shaman puts on their parka backwards with, you know, the hood over the face, and then engages in sexual contact with the bones for several days, singing and chanting the entire time.
That's interesting. That's it's quite the mental image.
Yeah. I guess more akin to automatons. I know there's some sort of traditions of that in Chinese mythology. I was looking into that, but I forget the exact name, but it's like inventor Yan Shi or something, who made a puppet that was so lifelike that... Oh, yeah. When he showed it to the emperor and the puppet made a pass at the emperor's head concubine, the emperor tried to have the puppet executed.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Sounds about right. Yeah, I know there was a few stories of various automatons, especially during the Tang Dynasty, coming to life in various ways. The horny-ass automaton gets his head chopped off.
Well, the funny thing is, like, the inventor ends up, like, showing the emperor, like, hey, like, this is made, modeled after a human body, but all the components are artificial, right? It's specifically made in imitation of the structure of a human body down to the internal organs, which I thought was really interesting.
Look, if this was a far thinking, if this emperor wasn't so defensive, he would be thinking about, look, The reason we have all the Imperial Chinese harems were guarded by eunuchs was because of, not because they were afraid of the members of the harem having sex. It was about the bloodline. It was about, like, whose child is this? If you have horny automatons instead, that's fine. Like, what's the problem?
The Emperor of China orders the invention of the Steely Dan 1,000 years prior to
there you go
to the Europeans.
There you go. That's it. One of those precursor, one of those
ancient Chinese fuck machine.
Ancient Chinese. I'm sure they existed.
I mean, you know, we have in like unknown armies examples of automata of clockworks that were made specifically as fuck machines. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Ivan Stahl.
Made for Catherine the Great. So again, it's a similar principle. Similar principle. Now, I would say that it's really sort of... Alchemy is, I'd argue, what really like kind of brings in this notion of like imitating God into the European tradition, at least. Though there is a word for the concept in Muslim alchemy.
Yeah, Taqwin.
Yes, thank you. Taqwin.
Taqwin. Yeah. There was even a reference to, and I think this is when you get some bit of Gnosticism in some Islamic traditions, but there was even a mention of like not just taking the power of a god, but taking the power of the demiurge, which I think is also a fun spin.
Sure.
If you want a more Gnostic
Yeah,
game.
Just like, man, this guy did a terrible job. I could do his job better.
Yes, yes. That's so good. That's the other reaction to finding out the universe was created by the demiurge. You're like, either you want to escape or you want to be like, no, nah, fuck, we can do this better. This guy's a hack.
My understanding is in sort of the Muslim alchemical framework, Taqwim was more of like the overarching goal of the school of thought than like creation of the philosopher's stone was.
Sure, it was the goal.
Though, admittedly, it gets a bit dicier when you're talking, because like, you know, the creation of gold doesn't just have the literal meaning, there's also the spiritual purity meaning. And I'm not sure how much that extends to Muslim alchemy.
Oh, it totally does. Everyone's always about the purity in the end of in end game.
Yeah, but like, is gold associated with purity in Muslim alchemy?
I don't think so. No, it wouldn't be because like gold is limited. Like, for example, men are not supposed to wear gold jewelry.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. So going on to stuff in the Unknown Armies 2 books, sort of stuff with the. A bit more reason for historical precedents. The Unknown Armies books do give, as one of the example rituals, the creation of the homunculus.
Yeah.
So the way that ritual is described in second edition book.
Okay, this is one masterful part of it, a part of the description of the homunculus, which like alters the entire way. Accept it, you read it, is the description of the effect as being... creates a miniature human being roughly the size of a pint flask or of a classic 12-inch G.I. Joe doll. Because that line, classic 12-inch G.I. Joe doll, recontextualizes it to me individually way that I quite enjoy.
It's a little guy. Yeah. It's a copy of yourself, must obey any command that the creator gives them, and can learn any skill that the... creator teaches them, but they are also born with the instinctive knowledge that they will be free upon the creator's death.
Yeah, sure.
So, the first thing you should do when creating a homunculus is give it the command, never harm me. The very first thing you should do.
One thing that creation of a homunculus is going to do is going to show you what the person is like, right? So a homunculus is only as bad as the person who creates them. Like, I'm not too worried about creating homunculi because I know myself, and if I was a homunculus, I'd just be like, okay, I'll be free after my creator's death. I can wait. It's fine. I don't mind. I'll just be a homunculus for a while. No problem. Don't mind. But yeah, definitely, if you're like, depending on like the predilections of the soul.
The way I figure your homunculus would be, they'd make the calculated thing of like, what's going to be more work? following this guy's instructions for a few years, or going through all the effort of killing him when I'm like a foot tall.
And think about the logic of do you want a little evil version of yourself who knows all your secrets running around? And there's the opposite of that is like, do you want to go against a gigantic version of yourself that knows all your secrets?
Yeah.
Just to like, when you can just wait a bit, because I don't think like Homunculi can live for a long time. So all you have to be is like, well. Come on,
I think part of the appeal of Homunculus is having a servant that already kind of knows what you want.
Yeah, that's right. So I could see my Homunculus being a little bit shitty. Not shitty, but like being like, oh, come on, have another drink. It's all right. Yeah. Look, that would be the extent of, I feel like, you know, there'll be a moment of, hey.
Give him a little thimble full of beer every so often.
Yeah, sure. Oh, come on. Well, that's another thing. Don't treat your homunculus like shit.
Let them have a break so often.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally you.
It's like any underling, right? Where it's like, all right, sure. You know, this whole relationship will go a lot more smoothly if you treat them with respect and give them some creature comforts.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. It's like, hey, homunculus, guess what? You don't have to go to work. And he's like, hey!
Yeah, you know, give him the weekends off.
Well, no, like, in terms of, like, oh, no, he has to do, like, random tasks for me, but he doesn't have to, like, work for the man in the sense of going to a place of employment and shit like that. And that's a big advantage.
Well, but then the homunculus is like, hey, man, can I buy shit off Amazon? And that turns into a whole thing.
Yeah, but it's like, for example, if the homunculus wants a bottle of vodka, that's going to last him a lot longer than it lasts me.
Fair enough. You need to give him a little tiny, like, G.I. Joe slash keyboard.
Yeah, of course, you can get them off Timu, probably. Something along those lines, or just on a phone.
So, the ritual for creating a homunculus specifically says, first of all, only males can make the homunculi with this ritual. And I think if there's anything we've learned in, you know, the 25-odd years, that...
It's bullshit.
I guess it depends on what you want to go with when you mean male, but I can't see any reason a trans woman couldn't make a homunculus.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, there's got to... Yeah, okay. Maybe this particular ritual...
The question there is the homunculus pre or post transition. And I'm going to say post on the grounds that those bodily fluids are probably going to be full of estrogen.
I don't think it's not going to work. I think it's going to work fine.
Yeah,
but it's going to maybe have an effect. It's more going to come to the... it'd be funny if there was like a discovery by like some adept or some ritualist who went through transition. Who was going through transition and kept making homunculi throughout the process just to see what happens. Discovering that there's a certain level where it's like the perfect homunculus. Like it's like...
You make the fucking... You make the rebus. The perfect balance of male and female traits.
And then you have a whole bunch of like other adepts trying to like... balance things, not because they want to transition,
trying
just because
to fucking,
they want to
create like, a bunch of abs ordering like DIY estrogen and shit online. They're like, all right, I need to make the rebus. I need to find the perfect dosage of estrogen so I can make the rebus.
Oh god, can you imagine like now I'm imagining like underground adept homunculus pageants my creation.
Oh god.
And see the tricks it can do. You know that would happen.
Yeah.
You could totally run a campaign where everyone's just playing a homunculus. And if you're like, we have to escape this like pageant slash like homunculus fighting ring. We have to take these giants down. You're all just fighting versions of yourself. So that would be a fun campaign, actually.
Yeah.
It's an excuse to be a little dudes running around.
Or like you're a bunch of homunculi whose masses have died and kind of ended up together for whatever reason, and you're doing a little tiny guy homunculus shit.
Would you want to have a whole party of homunculi of the same guy or gal? Or do you want to have like a sort of mirrored parties sort of thing? The bad guys being like the giant versions of the...
I can see it going either way. You can also split the difference and be like, all right, there's like, say, two ritualists So you have like a party of four. Two are one, two are the other.
What if you're a homunculus, right? And then your master got just lost a ritual of union? Like, what do you do then? Like, you have to kill the other.
So here's an idea. Here's an idea, right? You're homunculi, but you're made as like surrogate children by a ritualist gay couple.
Okay.
And, you know, there's this nice, like, coming of age story, like, this whole thing of, like, coming out of, from beneath your parents' shadows.
That's different from, like, this classic homunculus, then. If it was, like, a making a child, then it's a bit different.
No, again, you're surrogate children. You aren't actual children.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, fair enough. Do they want you to act like a child?
And
like
Yeah, I figured that would be it, where they're like, all right, listen, for the first few years, you act like a baby, then you act like a kid. Don't worry about it. It'll be fine. And then, you know, when you turn 18, I'll let you go.
But the funny thing, the homunculus who's stuck in this, like, undignified position remembers the logic that got them there. I thought this was such a good idea. It made sense.
You know, I can really empathize with the guy, but, you know, none of them have been on the receiving end of this for, like, 70 years. This fucking sucks.
Yeah, like, if you find yourself a homunculus, there's no one you can blame but yourself, really.
Yeah. So the ritual for homunculus creation is pretty interesting. So first you gotta blow a pint glass during the full moon using sand collected from under high tide. Then you gotta masturbate into it at the dark of the moon and vacuum seal the flask using a magnet as a stopper, pouring the positive pole of the magnet into the flask. And you bury the flask under a pile of horse manure, deposited by a horse with hair the color of your own. After 40 days, drill a hole in the stopper and immediately fill the flask with your own blood, taken from the femoral artery. And then you should see a human-shaped blood clot form in the center of the flask, shining with its own light. Once a week, you refill the flask with your own blood as above. See, you're doing it every day. So your homunculus is going to be fat as fuck. Or it's going to be very red.
Oh, yeah. If I was going to have a like a homunculus making ritualist in a campaign, one of the ways that I could sort of foreshadow it is to have the particular ritualist have like blue hair or something, and then you later discover why have they dyed their horse's hair blue as well? That's weird. What would be the purpose of that?
And see, what could be fun is like the different homunculi represent different, you know, the time they were made. So some of the homunculi have blue hair. Some have green hair. Yeah. One has green hair.
Oh, and that, I'm thinking now of that meme about like Gen Zers who are going through like different like political phases. At like one point, they're a Nazi, and then they start watching Counterpoints, and then they go like pro LGBT, and then they read something else and go like become a communist, and they bounce around the political compass. Not that I believe the political compass isn't just bullshit, but but a series of homunculi that represent like different stages in someone's like political development, ideological development, would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's solid. You know, you can actually have that whole experience of arguing with a younger version of yourself.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, do, I guess it will depend on the ritual, but how much homunculi actually develop, like separately from you? Like, are they stuck in that, like, what you were at that time? They could be in some rituals. They'd be just like, they're just always that version of yourself. But in other versions of the ritual, they're going to, like, start becoming independent thinkers based on whatever experience they're having as a homunculus.
I think basically anything capable of learning on some level is going to have the latter going on. It's, I guess just how much it internalizes in terms of ideology. So the last step is you got to dissolve the flask using your own stomach acid, and then you can't expose the flask to light during any time of the process. So the fact that it was in the fridge, and also make sure that the flask remains at blood warmth for the entire period.
Yeah, that I fucked up, didn't I? Well,
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, well, I don't think you fucked up as bad as I did, dude.
That's true. You can make a cold.
Yeah, you know, say it you will. Say it you will. It apparently tastes pretty different when it's been refrigerated.
You can make a gazpacho homunculus if you want.
What I find interesting about this is, like, you know, you see this ritual and you're like, oh, classic unknown armies. Put a bunch of gross out shit in there. You know, it was the late 90s, yada, yada, yada. No, this is basically the ritual. This is the ritual that, basically the rituals that exist in, like, the original writings by Paracelsus.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Like, it wouldn't, you didn't have to be, it wasn't that edgelordy, really. It wasn't edgelordy for the sake of edgelordiness. It was literally what it was. It was, this is the sort of shit they got up to, the ritualists of the medieval and Renaissance days, so.
There's a bunch of extra details added in the write-up.
Sure, they twisted around.
And Anori is like, you know, the stuff with the magnet and the color of the horse's hair, the stomach acid.
They add a bit of, like, often I feel unnecessary detail because I'm like, does this help in a plane play at all? Being like, okay, guys, you have to wait for the dark of the moon.
But, I mean, the original write-up in Paracelsus has the sperm and... Mm. The horse dung, though there's room for interpretation on that one, and the human blood.
If I was going to include an element of like celestial phenomena involved here, I think it would be more fun to go for something like you must masturbate during an eclipse while looking at the sun or something like, or like something specific like that.
You specifically need to blind yourself by looking at the eclipse.
Yes,
the orgasm.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. There we go.
Now, an interesting thing about the original Paracelsian writings is that... So a lot of times, the instructions are interpreted as horse dung. But the literal writing is Venter Aquinas.
Okay.
Which means either the bowels of the horse or the womb of the horse.
Uh-huh.
This could be interpreted in a number of ways. It may differ depending if you ferment it in horse shit or you actually, like, remove a horse's womb and gestate your homunculus in there.
I do like the word ferment. It just, like, I want to see some homunculus rituals which are more like making pickles or kimchi. It's just like, it's in the back of the cupboard.
Put a bit
like
of vinegar in there, some peppercorn for spice.
That's right.
It could even be argued that maybe the horse's womb could be an entirely symbolic thing in some regard. There's a low-hanging fruit there, which I'm going to move past and avoid.
Yes. Good.
Yes.
Well done.
Thank you. This is kind of unrelated, but I was looking into like the fact that like they say it's supposed to be the sperm of a man. It's just because like, oh, wait, like, they have a notion of sperm at this time? That's kind of wild to me, and I looked into it, and do you know what they thought sperm were at the time?
You mean the animalcules?
They thought they were, like, little tiny, little itty-bitty tiny dudes.
Yes, or, like, every animal sperm was just, like, itty-bitty versions of the animal, which is fun.
That's adorable! I love that!
Yeah, it is pretty great. I mean, it's not completely far off. It is, but it's also, it's an interesting, it shows that they're starting to think about things.
Spermatozoa is sort of like the most basic form of life capable of independent locomotion.
Ah, yeah.
And just like, it's a tiny, tiny cell with a flagella.
Yep.
Like, that's about as simple as life that can, you know, move around under its own power can be.
But I do like the idea of tiny, like, just little men, little tiny little men.
Oh, yeah, that's great, that's great. And I also find it interesting that, like, they're specifically a clone, because, like, that means that even at this time they had some notion of the fact that, like, all right, you need the contribution of the man and the woman to create this third entity that has traits of both. If you if you only have one, then all you make is just a copy.
Right, yeah. Copy of yourself, and it becomes like start getting the Xerox problem.
So,
like, what if a homunculus creates a homunculus?
Well, that's what I was gonna say here. Is a fully grown homunculus is, you know, apparently very skilled in art and craftsmanship. Can a homunculus therefore create another homunculus? Can a homunculus create a clockwork?
Yeah.
Can a homunculus create like a natural servant, unspeakable servant?
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Why not?
if the homunculus is a clone of you in all ways, it will be very easy to do some to do a, the what's that the sympathetic bonding thing, proxy, right? But could you just use a homunculus's eye to create an unspeakable servant?
I'd imagine it'd have to be a very tiny unspeakable servant.
It would be itty bitty one, but you said that before.
You know, I'd imagine there's there's a certain amount of like ritual delusion, of mystical delusion that happens when you're doing stuff with homunculus.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, it's the VHS tape that gets copied over and over.
I mean, the image I see, right, is a homunculus gets real fucking tired of having to follow their masters. Instructions and do all the chores and shit. Yeah. And the master never told them, hey, you can't create a homunculus. So they just created a smaller homunculus of themselves to do the same fucking thing, to do their shit.
Oh, yeah. It's homunculi all the way down.
Yeah, exactly. Just fractal homunculi.
You find yourself like in a house infested with little ant sized versions of yourself.
Yeah.
Just wondering, like moving shit around. Now, that's fun. I'm imagining, like, now I'm thinking of, you could, if you were a fucked up, ritualist, that wanted to experiment on the human condition, like, often people want to do, it seems like homunculi could be a very good replacement for your classic lab rats, in various experiments.
All right, interesting, yeah. You know,
and now
neurotransmitters work the same way.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And that's a one-shot idea. You're like the homunculus, but you're being put through like a series of fucked up challenges and weird like quandaries, running around this maze, at the behest of like yourself, your giant self who's glowering down at you.
And especially if you're talking like psychiatric medication, it's a lot better than rat testing. Like, are you familiar with the pore salt test or the forced swim test?
No, what are these things? They sound frightening.
So basically, there's not like really you can't really tell when a rat has depression or not, right?
Sure. Yeah. Oh.
So the way that they test that, like they test antidepressants on rats and shit.
Yeah.
Is they give the rat the antidepressant. You know, there's certain genetics that they've, like, been, like, okay, this is analogous to depression, yada yada. And then they put rat in just, you know, a little tube full of water and force it to tread water. And basically, the efficacy of the antidepressant in humans is supposedly proportional to how strong the rat's will to live is.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This is how antidepressants are tested on rats.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, no. And then you just do that with a little homunculus instead.
Well, my point is you don't even need to do that. Like, this is way more ethical, right? I'm not drowning any rats. I'm just asking the tiny version of me, like, hey, how do you feel?
I'm really experimenting on myself when you think about it.
Yeah, some biohacker or something just ends up finding about a homunculi and you're like, oh wait, this is way better for testing shit out. Instead of wasting all this time trying this shit out myself, I can make 10 of me. Like, really test varying combinations really efficiently.
I do like the idea of these, like, fucked up, these little men, little homunculi who've been, had all this, like, fucked up, shonky, like, cyberpunk stuff attached to them as, like, we're going to see, is this going to work? Is this, like, new artificial arm going to work on me, big one? So let's make a little prototype version. You stuck with these little Borgs that are unhappy about the situation.
Oh, poor guys.
Yeah. Of course.
So, that's basically all I got for the homunculi, at least. They're fun, you know? They're as much fun as you can have with an action figure of yourself that follows in your instructions and is basically otherwise independent.
Yeah, the issue of them is generally, I mean, it is risky to make them. It's also kind of fucked up to make them if you ever think about it a little bit.
It's also time-consuming and there's a lot of failure points, right?
Yeah, lots of failure points. Still, useful. I know people that use them well. Yeah. If you can develop a relationship of trust with your homunculus, usually things go a lot better. If you've ever... Devunculi are pretty, what's the word for it? They've got the advantage of their weight, and they being able to be like flung around and like not die immediately because of the force.
You gotta think of yourself as a mentor to your homunculi, because you know you have about 40 days of extra experience on them.
Sure, you just don't be a dick about it. Like your success with your homunculus is going to be dependent on how much of a dick you are and how tolerant of dicks.
Largely, like I'll say, if you're a really vindictive person, probably don't make homunculi. Yeah. It's not going to go well. Even if you try to treat them well, it's probably not going to go well for you.
If you have a lot of self-doubt and blame.
Also true. And that's part that's not going to go well for the homunculus.
Yeah. But it could go either way. It really could.
I've heard of a few stories of people making homunculi themselves just to have an outlet for their own, like, self-hate.
Oof. That's an interesting, like, finding, like, for example, like, homunculus can pretty much, I believe, and in my head canon, they can survive even if they're, like, locked up somewhere, or they don't necessarily need to breathe or eat.
They don't need to eat, yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah. So, I'm imagining, like, finding, like, a... like some ritualist homunculus that he just put in a jar and buried and then died. So the homunculus is technically free, but in a jar under the earth.
Yeah.
I feel a lot of these things I'm coming up with are just like riffs off Jack Vance, because like that's something.
Yeah. There's a lot of this sort of shit in Jack Vance stories.
Exactly.
I also got some stuff on unspeakable servants, but I know there's a few other constructed beings that ritually constructed beings that have shown up in the Unknown Armies books.
Sure.
Over the years. You were mentioning a few of them. There was like the turnkey.
Oh, yes, the inflatable turnkey. This is in Oddities and Endlings. These are interesting. They're meant to be. They're kind of like a blow up golem thing. Starting life as a deflated heap of plastic with a little battery powered air pump for rapid inflation and marked with the Elder sign.
Of course.
And wearing a uniform related to some kind of service occupation. And so, based on once inflated and dressed, you activate it by daubing a four letter word of your choosing on its forehead and giving it a command. So, you just get like a little blow-up version of someone in a particular role, whether it's a maid or a chauffeur or whatever you want. And they know how to do one thing, pretty much. They can do that one thing. They're a very specific role that they fulfill, and they can get better at it over time. But when they get loose, they end up like getting way too into it and start elaborating upon like that one task in various ways. And there are stories of ground little civilizations of abandoned inflatable turnkeys that have got together to perform their one function, but they all have a different one function, or some of them have one and some of them have a different.
So it's specifically function profession based, right?
Yeah, like they have like something like the examples they give are like mowing lawns, tending bar. Like that's like a very specific role. While as a golem, golems, general golems and other things, they can do different things depending on what they're commanded to do. Well, these ones are like they're created for one purpose. I kind of wish that the purpose was written like instead of the four-letter word, it was like just a verb, and you just like daub the verb on their forehead and that's all they do. Whether it's drive or like clean or like bartend, it's written on them.
Yeah,
I think that would be fun.
That gets tricky. The four-letter word.
It's a four-letter word is interesting because
it's good, but it makes it kind of hard.
It's you got your kill and you've got your fuck.
Yeah. Sure.
But then you've got maid. You can maid. Yeah. I think having just like a verb of what they do would be.
I do like the four-letter word limitation because it does mean you need to be really more creative
think
with
about it.
But
yeah, sure.
I don't know, maybe four letters or less Is it also some three-letter words that could be good?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think these things should have much bandwidth.
They have it's in the how they're written up, like with they've got the their purpose is at 60%. It can be a bit higher or lower, but it's like what they're good at. And it's that it's the one thing they're good at. And for everything else, they've got winging it at 20%. Which is I think is good. So they can try to do other things. They're just bad at it. They don't have any
No, that's
abilities
solid.
or anything. They
That's
just
solid.
yeah.
So if you really want to mass produce some servants for yourself, I tend to think of these things as like that stuff I was talking about with standard purposes for the creation of constructed entities. This is sort of that taken to its bare essentials. You got kill, you got fuck, and I don't know, you got like till or something, right?
Work. What?
Work.
Maybe.
Kill, fuck, work. Yep. Is there a
Okay.
human component to these?
Well, not really. It's more golem-like, but it's just fashioning a golem out of plastic and air rather than clay.
I would say the creation ritual should be like you need to originally inflate it with your own breath, and then you attach the air pump.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah.
Bare minimum of a sacrifice, just a bit of your own oxygen, and create something that's pretty minimally potent, but useful in
Yeah.
certain circumstances. Are there any other of these kinds of entities that show up in the
Think
books?
not in this book, because a lot of these are just like they're things that are created not deliberately, but as a byproduct of other things going on, which means that they're not
Which,
really
yeah,
what we're looking
it's
for.
pretty standard for natural entities.
I think that was the one example from here. There's probably others in the other books, definitely would be. But
Yeah, I
let's
imagine.
go on to the big the tentacle daddies, the unspeakable servants.
Yeah, this is kind of how unknown armies figure out its back door and to bring in some of the Lovecraft shit.
Oh
But it's
yeah.
mostly an imagery, if not like thematics. So an unspeakable servant is a big old pile of shit. Not little shit, I should specify given the current context. But it's a big old pile of pseudopod and stuff.
Yeah.
Just kind of a writhing mass of whatnot that has been built out of the pieces of sacrificed animals. So another recurring motif. And then one of their creator's eyes. So that's the specific thing.
This is what, when you were bringing up the Tupolak before,
Yes, very
it
similar.
reminded me a bit. I'm like,
Though there's no semen involved in the creation of unspeakable servants. All right, you can
Oh,
add it if
really?
you
I've
want.
been doing it all wrong.
Well, that's the nice thing about jerking off during a ritual. It's very rarely gonna like make the ritual fail. May it
Yeah.
be unnecessary? Sure. If you aren't sure of the details of ritual, being off in the middle of it's a pretty safe bet.
At worst, it's gilding the lily.
Yeah, exactly. The ritual is not actually described in this book. We just kind of know the components, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, because the ritual is in a different section of the book.
Being pieces of animals of various sizes, and then you got the creator, specifically the creator, has to pluck out their own eye. You can't use some other donor's eyeball. It needs to be your own. That's very
Yes.
part of the ritual. And I'd say that's probably like a running theme throughout these sorts of entities, is that the donation needs to come from the person creating it.
Yeah.
Could you force someone to make a homunculus at gunpoint? Sure. The homunculus is going to follow their instructions, not yours.
Yeah. You
And
mean unspeakable, but unspeakable servant as well. You
yeah,
can make
exactly.
someone take out their own eye to make an unspeakable servant. You can like compel someone to do that, and people have, but that's a risk. It's a big risk.
After you do everything that you need to make these guys, you just kind of end up with like this blob of various animal parts that can move around, climb around. They're very good at squeezing into tight spaces,
Yeah.
which is kind of their big feature in that they can puppeteer a corpse. They can like
Yes,
squeeze their
usually animal's
way.
corpse.
Yes, but it depends on the size of the unspeakable servant. especially.
Yeah, exactly.
And the corpse, of course, is still going to be rotting. But the unspeakable servant can squeeze themselves into all the crevasses and veins and whatnot of a person or animal and then operate them like a fucking spacesuit. Like a fucking scuba suit, right? There are clues. Like, they're black instead of red, so they inhabit a person. That person's, like, lips. Kind of the redder, what's normally, like, the more flush parts of their skin. Instead, turn black instead of red. And then, of course, they need to leave an eye out of its socket. Because, you know, they still do use the human eye to see. They don't have depth perception.
They have that one eye.
As a result of that. They got one single eye that's their, you know, the how they look at the world. They follow the will of their masters, though they're a lot less resentful about it than your average homunculus, because, you know, they're more of a blank slate.
They're not a copy of someone. They're weird. They're not human. They don't think like humans. They're not... Yeah, there's definitely a removed element from even your golems. The golems aren't human either, but the speakable servants are a bit different. They don't... they're intelligent, but they're not humanly intelligent.
I'd imagine an unspeakable servant would think differently depending on what parts you use, right? So, like, if you use a bull, then they're going to be more ornery and bullish in personality, for example.
There's some in one of the books. I can't remember which book it was, but there was some fiction written from the point of view of Lucifuge, who was the sleeper unspeakable servant. And it's interesting, his interiority is very much like they ask him a question and something moments ago he had a zero opinion on it in any one way or the other, but then he just instantly frames like an exact opinion based on what he knows, doesn't really think or question things unless he's asked to, is just there following orders and doesn't mind. That's because he doesn't have it wouldn't occur to it to mind.
Their only interiority is that which they've been instructed to have.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool because it does mean you could like make a unspeakable servant with a really complex interiority by asking a bunch of existential questions.
Oh, yeah, sure. Or telling it. You must become more human. You must become... And it's like the Data character or like the Pinocchio that wants to be a real boy. But it's just doing it out of like obligation only.
Sure.
Which is fun to me. Like, I want to be a real boy. Don't really care one way or the other, but that's my own. I always follow orders. That could be a cool vibe. Oh, because they can acquire, absorb, and recall information extremely quickly.
Yes.
At least if Lucifuge is any example. But it's a removal for them. They don't care as much. But like, they'd be great theologians. They're kind of like ChatGPT in a way.
Yeah, kind of. They're like a bot. Sure, in the same way that ChatGPT is taken from like a bunch of parts of various human runoff. And then...
Yeah, exactly.
And something. Yeah, like you're very right. And a speakable servant is just a biological large language model.
Yeah.
It's a large mammal model.
Large mammal model.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a fun way to frame it as well.
Or a large language mammal.
Large language mammal, yes. Yeah. You could easily have, even in the way that the ChatGPT and other, the way they talk, you could incorporate that into a portrayal of an unspeakable servant.
Sure.
Imagine an unspeakable servant with like a filter. I can't give you that information. It's against our terms and conditions. Against the terms and conditions of which I was made.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not allowed to answer medical questions. I'm not qualified to do so.
No, it's because of the...
So, a few other things. They are free when their master dies, though a lot of times their master will like, bequeath them to an apprentice or a child when they die or whatever. And in a sense, I kind of get as unspeakable servants, like, they want to serve, in a way. Like, they're their first... instinct is to follow instructions in a way that's not necessarily the case with homunculi.
Now, I'm just imagining like a situation where there's a ritualist who has a homunculus and an unspeakable servant, and the homunculus keeps trying to plot with the unspeakable servant. Like, I can be your new master once this motherfucker is dead. But the problem being that once the ritualist, once the master is dead, unspeakable servants, yes, in some situations they might be like, okay, I'm just going to follow the homunculus, and the homunculus with like an abominable unspeakable servant is a pretty fun idea for an antagonist.
Yeah, sure.
I would say.
Yeah.
But there would be other situations where the unspeakable servant would be like, no, I'm just going to like kill you and go and do my own thing because they are...
Well, and then it could be like the homunculus has to follow the unspeakable servant's instructions because they're still a component of their creator in the unspeakable servant. So it's like, and between that sort of paradox, they're able to get shit, they figured out how to get shit done over the years.
Oh my God. I would represent them as like a really dysfunctional couple.
Sure.
Like the couple in The Curse where you've got just one, like the homunculus is just completely narcissistic and the unspeakable servant is just like completely socially dense, and like that would be a good dynamic. Because that dynamic in that show, I don't know if you saw it, it's painful, but it's so inspirational for fucked up characters.
I need to see that show still. I've put off because Nathan For You is just too much for me.
Oh yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, like I'm very sensitive to cringe comedy, to the point where like fucking I Think You Should Leave is too much for me sometimes.
The Curse, it's not even comedy.
Yeah, no, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard.
It's something else. It's
more of like a weird drama.
I would say it's a new genre. Okay. It's cringe. It's cringe horror. That's okay. It takes it too far. Okay. It's like it's painful. Like
that might be even worse.
Anything quite like it.
That might be even worse.
Yes, but it's I don't know. It's hard to even describe. It's a beast.
So the other thing about unspeakable servants is that they become more potent and more intelligent the larger they are. Lesser unspeakable servants, which are about the size of a small dog, and they can't even talk, but they can read and write. They're described as modestly intelligent, but less intuitive than humans, generally speaking.
Man, what does that even fucking mean? Like, so many things are, like, described, like, used, like, oh, this thing is less intuitive than human beings. Like, whether it's, like, sometimes it's aliens, sometimes it's, like, other unhuman things. It's like, but what do you mean by that?
I tend to think of that just in terms of, like, you need to be very explicit with what you tell it to do.
Sure, okay. So, like...
It's not super capable of, like, independent logic.
Sure. So it's like Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. Right?
Yeah.
Very sort of literal.
They don't really have much of an unconscious. They just have like that conscious forefront where they're like, all right, you know, taking things literally, that sort of shit. You have greater unspeakable servants, which are about the size of like a sheep or a large dog. They can talk. They're capable of independent reasoning too. Not very creative, but and show level initiative, but whatever. And then there's abominable unspeakable servants, and these are, unlike the other two, these are too large to fit in a human body. They're like the size of a bull or a horse.
Yeah.
I could see this being like a fucking, maybe doing like a Shoggoth Lord situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like, all right, they can fit in a human body, but it needs to be pretty fat individual.
Bring me the corpse of Yao Ming.
Yeah, exactly.
He's tall enough to fit inside. Like.
There you go. I mean, that's a hell of a fucking campaign name.
Yes,
the body of Yao Ming.
Oh, that's so good. Who else would be? Oh, Shaq.
Well, Shaq's also just like Yao Ming is tall, but he's very skinny. Shaq is just gigantic. Shaq is a huge individual.
It's true. I feel bad. I feel worse. If I knew that there was some cabal going after Shaq, I would be like, we must stop them. I wouldn't want them to go after Yao Ming either. But Shaq, I don't know. I feel that Shaq must be protected.
I mean,
he's a nice man.
See, the thing, I think we're thinking too inside the box here, right? Because we're talking about land animals. We're still talking about the square cube law.
Ah, right. So we got some whales in here.
Yeah, exactly. Have an orca unspeakable servant. What? How smart is that fucking thing? What happens when you take an unspeakable servant out of like a blue whale that's been beached and shit?
Ooh,
make one of those. Yeah.
That's really good. Like looking for beached whales just to put your unthinkable servant in. That's fucked. But pretty good.
Well, see, what I imagine that is like, all right, you have some like occultist that like lives out in the sea, and he's just like living in the
Oh yeah.
whale's belly, because
That's
piloted
pretty
by his
good.
people servant, he's using his boat and shit.
My name's Jonah, no relation.
Yeah, exactly.
I do actually know I like the idea. I don't know why I haven't considered it before, but I like the idea of grizzled sea adepts. There
Yeah,
are not enough
no.
sea wizards.
Anunnaris doesn't do enough with the sea, I think. There's not enough
Yeah.
beach Anunnaris shit.
How many times have you like the classic wizard in his tower, but where's the wizard on his boat? It would
Yeah.
make so much more sense. If you're like, I want to be alone, I'll go on my great on my boat in
Well,
the
no,
middle of
like
the
it's
ocean.
if you want to be a hermit ass motherfucker, buy a houseboat.
That's it. That's it. You could be in international waters. You
Yep.
can do all the things, anything you want.
Unhindered by all the sundry wards that have been placed along national lines by various federally employed wizards over the years.
There's lots of ley lines out there that are
Yep.
just the undersea lands.
I could see that being like a good bit with that. It's like, listen, we need to do this ritual in international waters. Everyone else has
Yeah,
fucking
sure.
wards against this shit. Except for weirdly Burundi, but this is easier.
It's just this weird sort of occult underground water world out there. It sounds really great, actually.
Fucking occult underground seasteading.
Yes, that's really good. Oh no, really good. That
The
should be a
only
book. I don't.
community more dysfunctional than libertarians as the basis for a society.
Now I want like I'm not going to do this, but I'd love a book like the equivalent of 100 Miles of Bad Road, but it's just about various like sea shenanigans around
Yeah, no, I
Anamis.
agree. You could do a ton of fun shit with that, I think. Oh yeah, this is giving me ideas. Shit. You know, especially since Unknown Armies tends to be more East Coast, Midwest, and where it's developed, you know, do something on the West Coast. Do something in California with that sort of shit. And I get it, because California really is sort of the, you know, that's Tim Power's territory, right? You don't want to step on his toes too much.
It's always the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. All very true. Do some stuff in Mexico. Go up more up to Northern California. Nobody really. Everyone talk about L.A. and L.A. and shit,
No,
but
but
nobody cares about Eureka.
what about Pacific Northwest?
Sure, that's also
Yeah.
another very like typical
Yeah, true.
occult fiction location. I mean, Twin Peaks and whatnot.
Yeah, but not off the coast as much. Not that
No,
people go up there
no,
like
Maritimes.
Maritimes, yeah, like Canadian Maritimes as well. That's kind of untapped, and that's a weird area. What is it, Prince Edward Island sort of places? That would be fun. That would make sense to have some sort of nautical occult underground going on.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Any other entities like this that we should bring up?
I don't know, actually. I think we sort of. Did we cover Unspeakable Servant? I think we did
Yeah,
sort of
we
well
I mean,
enough.
unless there's anything else you want to bring up related to them. They do generate a natural phenomena.
That's one thing I wanted to mention. They are. I wish there was a bit more guidance of what style of unnatural phenomena. Like I know it's good to have that sort of flexibility for them, especially with the abominable ones.
Yeah, you can do a fucking lot with them. They're like a kind of a way to bring in some of the classic Lovecraft elements in a backdoor way into Unknown Armies without like having all the, because then, you know, even if you remove the cosmic horror shit, all the tentacle monster stuff is fun. It's fun imagery.
Okay, here we go. So the abominable, unspeakable servants are nigh invulnerable to anything except damage from their master.
Yes, that is also true.
That's fun.
Yes.
Now, what you do is you have the unspeakable fucking servant in the orca that's just causing trouble, or it's up to no good. You need to take it out, but its master is somewhere out there somewhere.
No, here's what you do. Here's what you do, right? You take a cow and you stitch like a roughly human shaped suit out of it. And you
Sure.
have the unspeakable servant go in there and then you use it as armor.
Okay.
The
That
only
makes
thing that
sense.
can harm the unspeakable servant really is you.
That's true.
So you're just wearing the abominable unspeakable servant. The fucked up approach to that is like it's a fursuit, right? But then you look closer to it and you realize like, oh wait, that's actual animal fur.
Oh, that's fucked. So the because I like because the idea of the fursuit with the monster inside has been done a few times, but the fursuit with the monster on the outside is an interesting
Well, it's
idea.
fursuit with a monster inside with a guy inside the monster.
This is a really fucked up Iron Man.
Yeah, it's like a fucked up Iron Man turducken.
Yes, that's your character right there. Fucked up Iron
Yeah.
Man turducken. That's an idea. Like you can always combine it with some mechanical elements.
Yeah,
Not in
why
the
not?
creation of it, but like in like a structure and like a. Why can't it go on a car? Why can't you have your Carrie car? Like not Carrie, Christine. Like Unspeakable Servant car. It's just in the engine, or a plane, or anything really. Fucking.
See, I think they should require some like biological components just for their own comfort, and it's easier to survive. So, you know, there's parts of the car that are still mechanical, but then you need to take out some parts of it and replace it with like appendixes and shit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, you flip open the hood of the car and you see the engine block, but it's surrounded by various viscera.
I like the idea of a party of PZs being pursued by this fucked up like black helicopter, which has like the tentacles
Sure.
coming off it sometimes.
Sure.
Because like some of the weirder black helicopter lore does have them like acting in ways which
Yeah,
helicopters
like
aren't supposed
weirdly
to.
animalistic ways.
Yeah. So that would be quite appropriate.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right.
You can do a lot of fun shit with them.
You can also do lots of terrible things to them, and it can
Yeah.
be bad. It can be bad. You can have two of them if you're willing to lose both eyes.
You know, like when making unspeakable servants, the only real limit is your own creativity.
That's true. That's true. What about if like there's a thing about unspeakable servants being passed down to children and whatever, right? But like what if like you inherit an unspeakable servant and then you make a new one and like each generation you just get another unspeakable servant like to the stable. That's to
Yeah,
me
sure.
more.
There's all sorts of fun stuff you can do when combined when you have like ritualist families with these sorts of
Yeah.
things and shit.
That's part of the danger of ritualist families versus ritualist like individuals because lots of the
Yeah.
rituals are just like tend to just, like keep to
There's
themselves
that
and like hoard.
continuity.
The continuity means that it's the slow build up of power over time
Yeah.
like stocks that not stocks but like just like wealth compounding upon itself but it's magical bullshit.
I figure in that situation it should be like a Monster House situation where like the ritualist family's fucked up manor
Oh
it,
yes.
like has a unspeakable servant that
In the
is just
walls.
like filled out all the walls and pipes and wiring and shit. They made it to kind of have like a smart house
Yeah, there's
in,
like
you know, the mid-19th century
that's
and then, you know,
so good.
nowadays it's kind of redundant.
I know, but it's such a good I love the idea of like a unspeakable servant-driven smart house in like the 18th century, some manor, and it's like, oh, that's really funny.
It was a big game hunting family, so it's made from like the parts of a bunch of elephants that are on the walls and shit.
Oh yeah, sure. Oh, okay. All the walls should have like an animal head on them, and like the unspeakable servant will just like look through, like someone.
Yeah, there's all these trophies that wall-mounted trophies everywhere that the unspeakable servant looks
Yeah.
through.
Yeah, exactly. So we can do that. It's fun.
Well,
All right.
I think we've covered pretty much everything. So,
Are you feeling all right? You're looking a bit green around the gills and
well, I just remembered that coincidentally, and for an entirely unrelated reasons, a couple days ago, I ate a pint of your blood and also an entire horse uterus.
oh shit.
So I think we may be running into an issue in about like 40 days.
I see. Okay. That's all right. I've seen Alien and I have your